Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You're listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
This is Paul Hawksby.
And Andy Jacobs.
And welcome once again to the H&J Daily, some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. We had two fine, funny men in the studio. Not us, obviously. We had Andy Smart, ball runner, comedy store player, friend of the show.
On good form.
He's taken on a little bit of a daredevil stunt. He'll explain more. Alfie Brown, very nice lad, big Liverpool fan, brought us an impression. You'll see why he's good at impressions if you listen. And also, we had a bit of a chat. It was 1994, today, the first ever fantasy football show went out. And Andy reminisced and surprisingly remembered quite a lot, didn't he?
Yes, it was impressive.
Yeah, that and a few bits from us. Here it all is. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Andy.
Good afternoon, Paul. Good afternoon, everybody. And not for the first time, we're sort of questioning how an innocent comment in a news conference can turn into a huge story.
Yeah, it just feels like the archetypal quiet news day, really. I mean, I watched Jose Mourinho's press conference back yesterday because, they're always fairly interesting. Mm. And he was asked a question. Apparently, he said last week, look, you keep asking me for updates on Harry Kane. I don't know. I'm not a physio. I'm not a doctor. I know really as much as you do at the moment. I've got nothing else to add. So he was again asked yesterday, have you got anything? And he said, look, as I said the other day, if you keep asking me about Harry Kane, I don't know. Could be next week. Could be. Look, English is his second language. And I know what he said is what he said. But he speaks it brilliantly. But still, he's not fluent in it. And what he effectively said, the subtext I read into it was, look, it could be next month, could be April, could be May, could be next season. Yeah. I don't know.
No.
It wasn't Simon, the head of press, saying, we just want to point out now that Harry Kane's healing process is not as we'd hoped, and it could possibly be. It wasn't that.
No.
It was just the manager saying, stop asking me the same question because I can't answer that question.
No.
And suddenly it's turning, oh, who can replace him? Well, he's probably going to be fit. It's turned into something
else.
It's
ridiculous.
What was a fairly innocent, harmless comment.
It's Tuesday, January the 14th. This tournament doesn't kick off till June.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to be fit until May. He played a few games in May, but then the warm-up
and
games.
The guy is relatively a quick healer,
and
as he's shown in the past.
And he will be or he won't. It's so pointless, isn't it?
But I don't know, I just...
Suddenly Mason Greenwood's got involved.
I think if you look at the quote in black and white, it says, oh, he's throwing up the possibility that it could be next season. When you listen to the context of what he actually said in relation to the question, that's not really what I took away from it. But anyway.
Yeah. And talking of ex-Chelsea managers, Antonio Conte has been paid $85,000, another $85,000 by Chelsea, after his sacking was ruled to be unfair. The judge, you have to agree with him, that's what he's come up with, Andrew Glenn, he said, the complaint of unfair dismissal is well-founded. The respondent shall pay a basic award of $1,524 and compensation of $83,632. And I'm thinking, really? Unfair dismissal. As far as I remember it, I was their judge, actually. Yeah. So as far as I remember it, he did everything he possibly could to get the sack up from February onwards after the club didn't back him. To be fair, the club didn't back him in the transfer window in January. Mm. He started playing Hazard up front. We lost at Watford
False nine.
Yeah. False nine. It didn't work.
Played Giroud in goal a couple of times.
Well,
didn't
he got Giroud very late in the window, and he didn't, in the games where he didn't pick him, didn't do particularly well in Europe. By the time the cup final came around, we had a situation where Willian came on for about 2 minutes, and when Chelsea won the cup against United, he blocked Conte's face out in the team photo. So obviously the whole relationship had broken down. And I remember we beat Liverpool on the Sunday before the season ended, and then midweek we had Huddersfield. It was a very important game. And he picked the most strangest team. And I remember clearly sending a text to my son saying, I think he wants us to finish fifth. I honestly believe that because I can't believe the team he's picked. So, all in all, he didn't, you know, there were grounds to sack him. He did things that weren't right.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm very surprised that this came out.
It does
like
open
that.
Up a bit of
maybe,
a...
maybe the procedure wasn't handled properly.
Yeah, it
properly.
Possibly is. You know, the, it probably was the kind of HR procedure, whoever, what a player he was.
Tremendous player, HR procedure.
But
apparently, John Arlott was a Chelsea fan. Is that Rick Glanville was saying yesterday.
Who knew that? The great cricket.
Come on, you blues. Salary.
Sailor, he used to sing all the songs. Old John Arlott. I wonder, penny for the thoughts of Diego Costa, who was thinking, oh yeah, unfair dismissal. You never got a text at the start of the summer saying, hi Diego, have a good summer. By the way, I don't want you
next. By the way, they don't bother coming back.
Just the text.
And he was so popular in the dressing room. John Terry put up a video.
Diego Costa was.
Diego Costa, very popular in the dressing room. John Terry put up a video from his time at Chelsea where there was a play fight between the Masseur, who was a right laugh actually, Bill Blood, and Diego Costa. And he couldn't lay a finger on Costa, but you could see all the players were enjoying, they were laughing, and Costa was, he's a clown, he's great for the dressing room. So
I quite like Jose had gone to him for Spurs, so that would have been quite interesting, having an old school villain like that. But he's doing rather well now. Once he's fit, he'll be playing for Atletico again, of course.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Hawksby and Jacobs here on Talk Sport. Welcome back to the studio to comedian. He's currently on tour. He will be very shortly with a show that was very successful at the Edinburgh Festival called Imagination. And it's Alfie Brown. Good to see you.
Hello. How are you?
Yeah, good. Yes, good. The show, it says, explores love, friendship and football. So that all the ingredients
it's perfect for the Talk
we're very
audience.
Keen on.
Isn't it?
Oh, yeah. You are a big Liverpool fan, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. I feel... I feel like I have vertigo almost. You know that bit in Alan Partridge where he's sticking all the pens on top of each other?
Yeah.
And he goes, no, I've never done five. And that's how I feel. Like the pens are about to fall down at any moment.
Remind us why Liverpool then?
It's where my mother is from.
Right.
And my,
okay.
my pop, that's what I called my grandfather. I was, I don't know, indoctrinated, is that the right word?
Yes.
Yeah.
From a very early age. And that the decision was made for me. My great-great-grandfather was actually his job was to call in the football results to the Liverpool Echo's pink section.
Oh, wow.
So it's in my blood, if not in my voice. I desperately want Scouse's affection, but I cannot have it because my voice is just too gorgeous.
It's a kind of broad church, though, isn't it? The Liverpool fan base—they are a huge club. So you know, you'll go to games, and you know, you're not just going to hear local accents. It stands to reason.
Yes, I was once fortunate enough to meet Michael Owen, and he said to me, "What sort of Liverpool fan are you? Like, do you all have games and that? Well, are you a proper fan or whatnot?" And I went, "Well, I've never played for Man United. If that's any."
oh, beautiful! Nice. And what did you get back there? Did he see the funny side? Did he get Alan Shearer on you?
No, I think Steve McManaman chuckled, but he didn't. I don't think he was listening. He was too excited about the fact that a bet was coming in.
It's natural to feel apprehensive as a football fan, but if you could ever be comfortable with a position,
get the cigars. Don't light them yet, but certainly get the cigars out.
Yeah.
Certainly clip them in readiment. You should be.
They should certainly be rolled on whichever thighs they were meant to be rolled on.
I mean, City would have to win every single game, and Liverpool would have to lose at least five. That's just not going to happen. They've only lost one game in. They haven't even lost a game in a year. I mean, it's just not going to happen.
No. Well, great. I'm glad about that. Thank you very much for letting me know.
Relax.
And now I feel a lot more comfortable about it now.
Just relax. Have you seen if they're going to be playing at any point when you're on stage? I suppose they will be. There might be a few evenings, Champions League and stuff like that.
We will be playing away at Wolves or West Ham, somebody beginning with a W, when I'm on stage at the Soho Theatre. I've actually got in trouble with promoters before for having my iPad at the back of the stage and just putting it down before I think that was when we were playing Napoli in the final game of the group stage this season. I was in Delft in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
And they were very annoyed that I was obsessed with the football and not concentrating on going on the stage.
They're very obsessed with football, though, the Dutch. I mean, they're probably, you know, they're going to forgive you if anybody is, I would imagine.
Yes, well, I mean, certainly the people who worked at that particular venue in Delft, I'm not sure Delft is famous for its football or anything,
plates.
Really. Plates.
Blue and white china.
Yeah, that's the big thing. That's their big thing.
Oh yeah.
Well, maybe
blue
if I was
not your Liverpool
throwing
fan.
Clay instead of looking
They're
at my iPad.
They're worried about the fact that Ajax had got knocked out.
This isn't a football show, but how does, I mean, without giving away too much, how does kind of your Liverpool fandom fit into the context of the show, which is obviously about different things?
The show is about crowds and the element to which crowds get taken away. There's an old expression there, people go mad in crowds and only recover their senses gradually and one by one. And the show's sort of about that. And it's me, it was when I went to Liverpool, Southampton, in Southampton, and met these Liverpool fans who befriended us, and it was our whirlwind adventure together, witnessing this game. And it's sort of about people's willingness to accept me, or like their enthusiastic willingness to accept me, and the other people in the cabal's unwillingness to accept me. And it's sort of, in a way, about immigration, if you so inclined to accept allegories.
I just got to stop you there just for a second now, because we've got a bit of breaking news.
Do we?
And there could be some Watford fans on the motorway.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah.
The game's off, folks. Oh. Tranmere just tweeted, unfortunately, the pitch is not recovered. Old Storm Brendan already kind of dumped on an already damaged pitch, which meant the game has been postponed. So if you're on your way up the motorway, then stop, because it's off. A new date will be announced in due course, but no match tonight.
Why
between...
Why do they call it Storm Brendan? These great winds.
Especially, you don't want Storm Brendan when Liverpool are going for a title, do you?
That's the problem.
So anyway, game's off, folks. So unfortunately, we'll bring you more on that a little bit later on, but that's a bit of a blow.
Reading a review of the show, Alfie, there seems to be quite a bit of the show devoted to sort of working with the crowd, sort of improv and... having
yes.
fun with them.
Yeah, there is a lot of that. And I'm never horrible to the audience, so just don't not buy a ticket on that account, or at least you can always sit at the back. But I want to talk to the crowd, and which the way in which people operate and function as part of a crowd. In that, it's amazing. As soon as the lights go down and the music comes off, everybody just congeals into this crowd, and they have this sort of collective... psychological moment where they concede to the idea of what it is to be a crowd, and to acknowledge that and investigate that and the way in which that functions, and try and bring them out of it. And of course, crowds are united in kind of shared goals. In that, you know, it's the Liverpool fans' shared goal to watch Liverpool win. It's you know, protest marches' shared goal for austerity to stop or whatever. And it's the audience's shared goal to laugh. But also you can unite the audience by talking to one person, because it's their shared relief that they're not being spoken to. Mm. And to analyse all that stuff whilst it's going on, and then to address crowds in other ways. So there's the our shared moral perceptions about, like, Dubai or the mistreatment of people in Qatar and whatever. But we are more than willing to accept goods made by slaves if it's further away.
Yeah.
So, it, you know, collective cognitive...
I mean, in sport, in football, if you want to focus on one thing, it's the kind of great joy of being part of a crowd of like-minded people in that moment when your team score or they win something. Or
well, pre-VAR it was. Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly the problem with VAR. It sort of robs you of the immediacy, of the abandon, of the moment of scoring a goal. It's taken something.
You can't help yourself. It kind of does and it doesn't, because you can't help yourself. If you in that moment, you don't think, oh, it could be chalked off by...
I do.
I'm
a pessimist.
But I think you can't not.
I've done it several times this year. I just haven't. People have been going mad around me, and I'm just going,
let's find out.
Yeah, I just think you're lost in the moment.
Even that 5-4 against the fifth goal was disallowed against Ajax, one of the best games I've been to for a very long time.
Hudson-Odoi,
Abraham.
Tammy Abraham handball. That's right. But then you've got the sinister side of that crowd dynamic, which we're seeing a little bit more these days, that people think they can kind of get lost in a crowd and they have an anonymity to do all sorts of appalling things within football crowds. They think that will get, you know, they think they're going to get lost in the crowd, but of course that's not going to happen.
That is a function of being in the crowd, or whether that's just... I mean, I suppose you have the safety of the crowd, but these people are outliers, or at least you would hope that they are. And it seems like in every... you collect 45,000 people anywhere, and there's a good possibility that any number of any 45,000 people, there's going to be some pretty bad people there.
Sure.
So I don't Yeah, I wonder if it is the crowd, but these people feel like they're outliers and they're making an individual stand to say something awful away from everybody else.
They wouldn't do that as an individual in the street or in front of somebody, but they feel like in a collective they've got maybe a chance of, I don't know, whether it's not being caught or just a bit of an...
Isn't it the same as in social media where people feel empowered to do something?
Well, or in your car, you'll say something to, like when somebody cuts you up, you will confront them with more virulent animosity than you would if they were like you were nose to nose.
Oh God, he's getting out the car.
Yeah.
worst moments you could ever imagine. I just want to come back to something because you did a fine impersonation of Michael Owen there and it was really accurate. And I was thinking, of course, your mum's Jan Ravens. And does it run in the family there?
Are you a good impressionist?
Brilliant mimic, of course.
No, not really. I mean, that wasn't... It was like if
I thought it was good.
Well, it was... Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah,
actually,
I knew who it was.
Yes.
You didn't have to say
better than mine.
Oh, look, who's that coming into the room? Why, if it isn't? John Noakes.
I suppose if I never really practiced them, and I think if you're an impressionist, you really have to kind of work at it. And if an actual impressionist was here, I think you really would hear the difference. I'm quite good with my voice. I can do voices, but I wouldn't say that I was an impressionist anywhere near my mother, who I think is one of the best.
Would she occasionally tell you off as Margaret Thatcher or Cilla Black, or would she get? Would be a bit weird, wouldn't it?
No, she never did that. But she sometimes would do rather searingly accurate impressions of my girlfriends, which you don't want your girlfriends. The sound that comes out of her mouth suddenly coming out of your mum's mouth.
That's quite
a discombobulating feeling.
Very much so, yeah.
So, where can we see you then, Alfie? You've got actually at the Soho Theatre, aren't you?
From the Soho Theatre for a week.
Yeah, 27th of Jan. Yeah.
27th of Jan, yes.
1st of Feb, then you're touring the country with the show, aren't you?
Touring the country, going everywhere, unless I'm not going to where you are. And if where you are is Cornwall, I can only apologise. then I'm going to Australia. But yes, alfiebrowntour.com is my website where you should go and buy tickets if you are so inclined.
I mean, a bit of a weird moment for Paul Brown, who's got in touch today. He said, this is a bit weird. He said, my lad is called Alfie Brown, and I was told this week by his teacher that he has a future in comedy due to his impeccable timing. He is only 10. Also, my mum is from Liverpool, and that's why I'm a Liverpool fan.
Well, that's incredible.
A bit weird, isn't it?
Paul wants to be friends with me, I think.
Yeah, I think he does. He may be in touch.
Yes. Well, Paul, hi. Good choice on the name. If he does want to go into comedy, may I suggest that he... maybe he calls himself Zach.
What's his middle name? Yeah. Otherwise, he's going to get confusing. Either one of the Alfies could lose work in about 10 years.
I hope to do well enough that I am the primary Alfie Brown for the foreseeable future.
He'll be Alfie J. Brown.
No slight to your son, Paul, but Alfred. Did you name him Alfred Paul? Let us know on Twitter.
Alfred Brown.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
As Toby was just saying then, with the Tranmere Watford game off, we were just conjecturing what you would do if you're on the old coach. You could turn around. If you're on the train, you might as well carry on up to the Wirral. And Andy Smart is with us, and I was quite shocked to discover that he knew a lot of pubs on the Wirral. What a surprise
we used to do a pub crawl when I was at college in Liverpool, and we used to get at the ferry across because the pubs used to be shut between 3 and 5.
Hmm.
So we used to get the ferry across to Birkenhead and then go off into all those around there, just drinking in the pubs, and then go back to Liverpool again in the evening.
Did you have a favourite Liverpool pub back in the day? Is that where you used to be?
The Belvedere in Egbeth was a fantastic pub, yeah.
Oh, right.
I was captain of the crib team.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it still there? Because so many great pubs aren't. Is it still there?
No, sadly, time I went, it was closed down. It was all boarded up. Yeah, I think
Andy is a regular visitor of the studio, but he is, give you a bit of a bug if you've never heard. I find it hard to believe. He's here as much as we are, really. But he's been in the Comedy Store Players for how many years now?
It's our 35th birthday in October.
What about that? Improv group twice a week with the Comedy Store
in London.
Have you
been in the whole 35 years?
I was a guest up until 96, and then I became a full player.
He is a Farnborough fan. He is a ball runner. We often speak to him when he's off in Pamplona. He chases cheese down a hill in Gloucestershire. I mean, he doesn't do that as much.
Never again.
Dangerous.
Never again.
And you are
downies.
Now.
It's coming up on the 25th.
Shrovetide Tuesday Football. And he's often there in the, what do they call it, the...
The ups and the downs. No, the hug.
The hug when you're in the hug, and you commentate live with your mobile phone, which is good of you. And also...
1-0, I'm predicting.
It's always a very tight affair.
And if you could have a bet on it, it'd be quite
you're
fun.
You're writing a non-league football column.
I am for the non-league paper.
And you've taken in... What games have you been to recently?
Well, this weekend I went to Binfield versus Deal in the FA Vars. A classic.
Was it?
It was very windy, as you can imagine, on the south coast of Kent on Saturday. Binfield had a man sent off after about 60 minutes or 55 minutes. And then the deal went one up, and I thought, well, that's it now. And then Binfield got one back, so I'm going to the replay in Binfield on Saturday.
For goodness sake.
If they get through that, they're playing concert in Durham.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to follow it all the way to Wembley now.
So are you in the press box or are you in the fans?
No, I'm out.
press box.
I can't have a roll up in the press box. And the press box, usually a non-league ground, is just a different coloured painted bench.
So what other weird and wonderful games you've been taking in recently?
Where else have I been? I went to the Binfield Uckfield game in the
you
previous
round. You love Binfield, don't you? For goodness sake. What's the average home gate, would you say?
At Deal, it was 160, 180, they were saying. They were having a good season. I didn't realise that they'd actually won the FA Vars back in 2000, so they're the only club in Kent to have done it.
Financially, how does that work? I mean, you can't sort of finance a club on 180 people. I mean...
Well, you can, because the players aren't getting paid.
Yeah, I suppose so.
They're only getting their train fares or their bit of subsidies for their travel, and some of them get like 30 quid or something. The bar did a roaring trade on. It was very nice Whitstable ale down there. God. If there are other beers available.
You do love it though, don't you? You embrace it, which is the right way to
because
approach
it's, and you get chatting to people. I had a bloke came up with his son, and he was like, "What are you doing here? You don't."
So they spot you're an outside. Does it all go quiet when you walk in the stadium? 180 voices silence. They all look at you like an old Wild West saloon.
Or American Werewolf in London. In some of the bars. But they're very friendly at that.
Do you wear
level.
A hat with press on it so they know? A Trilby so they know who you are.
With some tickets in the hat band. No, I had a lovely bloke came up with his son on Saturday, and he was talking to me, and he said, your voice is familiar. I said, I do talk sport. He said, that's where I've heard you. He said, I listen to the boys every day. In fact, I take my lunch at 1 o'clock, he said.
Oh, God bless him.
Yeah. And
he particularly likes my take on the lower levels of football.
He does. Andy calls lower league football, which is anything outside the top six, isn't it, really?
Yeah,
that's the way he views it.
Because you came with me once to
Chelsea.
Do you like the occasional big match experience? It is very different, isn't it? I mean,
it
the
is.
Game at Chelsea or a game at Binfield.
I get a bit frustrated at the Premier games because I want to swap ends at half time, and I want to be walking around with my beer and going in a quiet corner for
I
a roll up.
I got friends up on Merseyside. I went up and watched Prescott Cables play a little while ago when I was up there, and we had a great day. It was brilliant. You know, you can just kind of wander around.
It's a great atmosphere. At Deal and at Binfield, both the clubhouses have got windows facing the pitch, so you can just stand inside with your beer.
The people were doing exactly that. But I can completely see the attraction. When was the last time you took in some non-league football?
I'm going to take you one.
I'd say never.
You've never been to a non-league
other
football
than
match?
The club I was involved with, you know, the local football club.
I mean Sundays. I mean, going to a stadium where you might pay sort of £3 or £4 to get in.
£3 or £4?
Well, okay. Well, I'm the sort of... Well, maybe... This is the
£12 down at Farnborough.
I'd say never.
You've never been.
I've never been.
I went to Hampton on New Year's Day. I went to Hampton Richmond versus Dulwich. That was a hell of a game.
You've got quite
great.
A few teams around.
You'd love
way.
Hampton.
You
I sat in the Alan Simpson stand because he was there. He was there for 40 years supporting.
Well, I don't know. To me, it always seems to success a snobby thing to say. I'm going to get slaughtered for this. But it's a bit like going to see. It's either. Do you want to go and see like the top actors at the Old Vic or some theatre?
Do you want to go and see Alan Dram?
That's it.
Yeah, doing. You want to DC it. The players?
I mean,
doing
some would
South
say there's
Pacific.
A lot of benefit of
but
seeing see, amateur.
Do you know, it's almost
but then that's where that's you know you see players that later on are going to go and play in the, you know the Championship and the Premier. Some of them even in the Premiership, like you know Vardy and Jones and
yeah,
and,
no, it does happen. Know. I agree. Yeah, with that, yeah.
That's right.
It's unlikely, though.
but you almost don't. I mean, look, you do watch it for the football if you're a fan of those teams. But if you're the casual observer and you go to those matches, you're not going for the technical excellence.
No,
are you,
you're going. Really? No. You're going to enjoy the whole experience. And yeah. You know, they all have really good food bars.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Which I mean, are amazing.
You do show your colours because I remember going years ago to watch Orient versus Fulham, I think, when they were both in what I suppose the equivalent of League Two.
Yeah.
And I'd gone with a mate.
Oh, yeah, I mean, the games like
the
that.
The ball was one end or the other. It was headed, then there was a miscontrolled pass, and then the ball was in the air, and there was a thing, a game of head tennis. And I said, get it on the floor. And this old boy turned around to me in his Orient scarf said, get it on the floor. You don't care how much, do you, mate? So just look of.
Well, you do get you get teams like that, but you also get teams that play really good one touch football, and they'll play their way through you, and you can see some marvellous managership on the sidelines where people. We were shouting the other day when Farnborough were losing 3-0 to Poole. We were all just shouting, "Put two strikers on! Put two strikers on!"
Did he listen to you?
No,
he didn't. What was the final score?
We lost 3-1.
Oh, well, you got a goal back.
We got
that's
one goal
quite
back.
An attractive idea that you have an effect on the pitch, because I was at Chelsea recently and I got so sick of them playing it out from the back that I screamed at the top of my voice and I sit behind the goal.
Yeah.
Go long! And he actually kept it. He heard me. He went, oh, long.
You're claiming Kepa heard you.
I am.
The new coach at Chelsea.
Yeah. The Chelsea keeper does exactly what you say. That's ridiculous. Now, we're going to have a chat about you're going to be our film
I'll try and save it.
Andy Spies with us. We've got some other stuff as well. But very quickly, last time we spoke to you, you were just about to head off to Crisis at Christmas. You always do a kind of week at Crisis. And
I spent the whole 7 nights outside with Mike, who was in charge of the outside area, and we had an area. We had the smoking area, we had a bit of a footpath, and a bit by the kennels where they keep the dogs. And we didn't have one incident for the whole week, which was like a record. No one's ever done that before. We found a record number of homes for people that were there over the Christmas. And we had about 210 guests every night, and they all had a good time. It was great.
Do you feel any more optimistic? How many years have you been doing it now?
That was my 13th
year. And you've seen the amount of people coming in, which has increased over there. But are you feeling any more optimistic maybe after this year about the sort of plight of the homeless? I mean,
I think there's more people doing stuff, but I think it's the government up to the government to do some stuff, and and universal credits are forcing more and more people to become homeless. It's got to change. That system has got to go because it's not working at all.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Andy Smart is with us in the studio. Maybe only welcome we return. And as I say, Andy is the ball runner. He does chase that cheese down the
Cooper's
the
Hill.
The Cooper's
You're like
Hill.
Comedy's John Noakes.
You are.
Yes,
that's right.
He was an inspiration to me. Yeah.
Well, you are taking on one of the great challenges. You just told us next month you're doing the Cresta Run.
Yeah, 12th of Feb. I'm doing the Cresta Run with Marcus Brigstock.
For those that don't know what it is, explain.
It's a really old bobsleigh run maintained by the British Army, I think, out in St Moritz, and it's just a classic. And I used to watch the racing with my gran when I was about 7 or 8, and when the racing was rained off, they'd have sports from around the world on ITV's World of Sport, and one of them was the Cresta Run, and I saw it and I thought, one day I want to do that. And I've been trying for sort of 45 years now to get, and I'm finally convinced Marcus to let me ever go. So he's got contacts there, so we're going to go.
That's
it's
amazing.
A 1.2125. I don't know if it's very accurate.
You just shouted a number there.
Yeah, what,
it's 1.212125.
125 from Manchester.
Yeah.
What is it, Andy?
It's a 1.2-kilometre run.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
one of the few in the world dedicated entirely to the skeleton.
Yeah.
I hope you skeleton, end up being a skeleton.
Skeleton
after.
Bob. Yeah.
Yeah, what a bloke! What a lovely lad he was.
Skeleton Bob.
I still love Skeleton Bob.
Great DJ.
Put a bit of weight on. Yeah. Also, as two comedians, you will be allowed to do that routine, won't you? You say to Marcus, "Who are you?" He says, "I'm a tobogganist." You say, "Well, I have 20 Rothmans, please." What's it? Just do that one.
That's ridiculous.
Tell us how far your chin is from the ice when
it's
you're
on. It's about 2 inches above the ice, wow. And you're doing about 60. Well, I won't be doing 60 miles an hour on my first run, definitely. I'll be taking it very cagey on the
it's
first
lucky
run.
Brucey didn't have a go.
Or Jimmy Hill. What are the
groove in the track.
What are the chances of you? I mean, what's the percentage of people that do come off on the run? Is it quite high?
I don't know. I would never look into those sort of figures before I did something. I might look afterwards.
Yeah,
but I'm not going to look into those sort of figures.
Of course. You're putting it in your mind, aren't you?
Yeah, there's a YouTube video of like people flying off at corners, but I'm not going to watch that.
Wow. Right.
The producer's been to St Moritz, he was just telling me.
Not to do this thing.
No, of course not. And unsurprisingly, he said to me it was the best cheese fondue he's ever had in his life.
Oh, yeah, he's a daredevil, isn't he? The way all that hot cheese, he could have burnt his finger, couldn't he? He doesn't mess about. What about that? So, Andy, is there anything, is there other things you'd like to try? You like these Def Defy? Is there another one you'd like to take on?
Great
white
sharks. Is
this a bucket list
I'd
one?
I'd like to go swim with great whites, yeah.
But not in a cage, knowing you.
No, just in one of those chain mail ones.
Wow.
Yeah, I'd love to go and do that. But anything that sort of crops up.
Is there anything you... I mean, so the cheese, you've decided now Cooper's Hill is too dangerous.
I did the cheese once, and I would never do that again. How they... There's the guy that has won it the last sort of 12 years, he's incredible, and he goes down and just bounces up again. It's like he's made of rubber. But I mean, I got to the end of it and I was covered in bruises. And the day that I did it, there was about 12 people taken off in ambulances to the hospital.
Wow.
With broken collarbones and broken arms.
It's
broken
done unofficially
legs.
Now, isn't it? Because I think they've kind of closed
they
it down.
Tried, yeah, the police would rather people didn't do it.
Yeah.
But they can't really stop them because they've been doing it there since about 6th century, so...
It's an age-old tradition.
Yeah.
I partly admire people who do these mad things, but there's part of me that does think, as you know, Paul, what's the point?
What's the point?
This woman is becoming the youngest woman to ski solo to the South Pole, Molly Hughes. She arrived yesterday after battling for 702 miles over 8 weeks. At one point, she faced an 8-day whiteout. And you think, I don't know. She said,
what's the point?
Well, I do really. The biggest challenge of the whole trip was being alone. I mean,
She's already climbed Everest. She's the only woman to have climbed both the north and south faces of Everest.
Yeah,
so
she's got plenty of time on her hands. Get a job, love.
I think it's all for charity if you look it up.
It's all, he said this to Sir Ranulf Fiennes. Sir Ranulf Fiennes. Honestly, Andy, this is true.
That was my worst one ever.
And he said, Sir Ranulf, he said, it's fantastic to meet you. And he said, I've always wanted to ask someone like you, an adventurer like you, what's the point? And he looked at him, and he honestly looked at him and said, well, I've raised £10 million for charity.
Yes, he was quite distinct.
Fair enough. £10 million the bloke's made doing this stuff, putting his life on the line. You know, he's a hero.
Edmund Hillary, what's the point, mate?
What's the Andy Jacobs, what's the point? You can see that on Channel 5. Now,
do you want to know about the bitten?
First, give us news of the bitten.
Yeah,
the bitten. It's a bird, isn't
the
it?
Thing was that for a long time on TalkSport, we had, was it an ad?
It was an advert. I'll tell you how old it was. I think it was for video cassettes.
All right. Yeah. Blockbuster.
Yeah. The advert would start with, it would start like, it would go, ooh,
that's the mating cry of the bitten. Good job, those winders.
So we got quite into the bitten. So I thought, you know, it became quite a thing on the show. And then obviously the trail or the ad stopped and that was it. I forgot it. But great news, the bitten has been voted England's bird of the decade.
Wow, fantastic.
The heron-like wader, because you couldn't say bird again, whose booming mating call, see, there it was, is the loudest in the country. Is that it?
Yeah.
I just think it's me. You're not very good with direction, are you?
You're throwing your voice.
Yeah, the mating call. Throaty mating call.
It's been given the honour by the RSPB. I don't know if there's an awards night.
The head bitten turns up.
Black tie. You couldn't be here this evening.
Penguin suits. Well,
penguin suits, yeah.
Their feathers are black and white anyway, so they wouldn't have
good bitten knowledge off the top of your head.
After it managed to fight back from near extinction.
That's fantastic, isn't it? See? Yeah. The bitten. You don't the mess with the
back.
Bitten, do you?
It's good. Once bitten, twice shy.
Very much.
Now, Andy, one of the big movies at the moment is 1917. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Saw it with the boy yesterday.
You've seen it.
So, I saw it with the boy yesterday.
I mean, no spoiler alert. I mean, just to let you know that we win it the following year. But I'm sorry about that, in case you didn't know.
You'd think they'd pick the 1918 rather than one that we lost.
Yeah. So, were you impressed?
I was very impressed. It's a stunning film. It's all about those little moments in war that make up the sort of the bigger picture, and the sort of the lives that are touched by one person as they go on a little quest, I suppose. But the fascinating thing about it is that it's all on one camera shot.
Wow.
Well, that's how it looks. I mean, obviously they must have cut here and there and then synced
it back
up. What
if somebody made a mistake?
Well,
it is absolutely
incredible the way they've done it, and it just looks like you get really caught up because it's almost like real time. You're watching this in real time, and you really get caught up in the action with it because it is that just one shot.
The only person you could get on board to play the lead role if you just wanted to do it really in one shot is Mark Nicholas.
Oh yeah, true.
The king of the one shot wonder, of course, the way he does the cricket.
When he does the cricket highlights, he often does the thing where you're quite a long interview with, say, Jofra Archer, who's player of the day, and he'll say, Jofra, fantastic.
So do 5-minute interview.
5-minute interview. Yeah. Then he'll turn to camera again, and that's an exciting moment in a great test match. Join us tomorrow at such and such. And you think, if he messes this up, he's got to do the whole interview again.
Yeah.
But he never does.
Never
until I put it into his head one time when we were interviewing him.
He said, no, he did. He really got. I think Mark looked quite worried when he left the studio.
No.
Yeah.
He's never thought about it before, ever.
That's right.
He just does it naturally, and then someone goes, oh, you know that thing you do?
Can't do it now. Yeah. Makes a mistake every time. Sorry, Joffre, I interviewed him for the 15th time.
It's like when you're playing golf with your mates and you just go, you're on a hole with a lake down one side, and you just go, don't think about the water. And you know, as soon as you say that, the ball's going in
straight in.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Managers can only watch and wait and hope.
Come on, Giggsy! Stevie, go and get the ball!
This is almost fantasy football.
Now, the BBC archive said earlier on today on social media that on this day in 1994, Fantasy Football League was first broadcast on BBC One with David Baddiel and Frank Skinner, of course.
Yeah.
And the first guests on show one were Peter Cook, the legendary late great Peter Cook,
brilliant,
and Mandy Smith.
I think she was going out with the Everton player, Pat
Vandenhout.
At the time,
certain notoriety in the 90s. She does kind of slightly date the guest list on that basis.
A little bit.
But I'm sure you're fully aware that Andy and I worked together on the show. I came in on the World Cup in 98, but Andy produced every fantasy football show
up through 98.
To the very last series.
I didn't do the 2004.
Didn't do the 2000, but right through certainly to the World Cup. So it was there. It was very much
70 shows.
As Frank called him in his autobiography, the Roy Keane of the operation, the engine room of putting fantasy football together. So I thought we might reminisce.
Great fun.
Well, the first thing that came to mind to me, because I've forgotten it had started in January, because I loved it, obviously I watched it as a viewer, was that it had started in January, which was quite odd. It was kind of mid-season. Can you remember why that was?
Yeah, because I think that we did a pilot in the autumn and it just seemed, rather than wait for the following season, let's get on with it. It didn't seem to matter, really.
And the Beeb didn't mind that.
No, the
pilot. Now, after the pilot, Janet Street Porter, she joined us in the studio a little while ago, didn't she? Mm. She was the commissioning editor, kind of overseeing fantasy football. She wasn't sure about Stato.
Well, there were two pilots, I think. The first pilot, Stato wasn't in it.
All right.
And it was Andrew Weinstein who had invented the game here and had the rights for it and everything. And he was good at what he did, but he wasn't quite right for what they wanted. He was a bit sort of straight and everything. Mm. And they wanted somebody who knew a lot about football but was a real eccentric character. And I bumped into Angus Loughran. I was on a gantry at Tottenham. We were doing, the company I worked for were doing this, the worldwide television coverage.
Yeah.
It was Spurs versus Leeds. And Angus was commentating for the Spurs club video. And I was just fascinated. I couldn't watch the game. I was just fascinated by this guy. And he's moving his head and just the way he was speaking, the whole thing. I thought, perfect, he's the guy.
Wow.
So I brought him in, and the chemistry with David and Frank was there immediately, and they had a lot of fun with him, and he joined in. He's a good man, Angus, and he joined in. He did everything they wanted him to do. And but then after that pilot, Janet called me in, and she said, he's not very good, is he, Angus? Time to get acting lessons. I said, that's the point.
Tell him to get acting lessons.
Yes. I said, he's meant to. He's meant to be like that. He's meant to be that bad.
Yeah.
That's the whole point of it. And so anyway, bless her, she let us get on with it.
Oh, well, that's good from her.
We did a bit of audience research, which was a bit odd, but
the show?
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of all that, as you know. I'm not.
What did they tell you about it then? What did the audience say?
I can't remember, but I didn't listen to any of it. I just thought, I quite like this show.
He hasn't changed, has he?
I don't care what you think.
Oh, hasn't changed. So we're looking at the...
I'm not a big fan of focus groups, you'll not be surprised to know.
What did you discover then about that first Peter Cook and Mandy Smith? What was it like that? Can you remember that first?
Yes, I can. And I remember Peter Cook being very, very funny. And of course, I think David in particular loved Peter Cook. You know, he was a comedy hero for them. It was near the end of his life. He died soon afterwards.
Right.
But he was still very funny. And, he did a bit about Alan Latchley, you know, the football
the great
manager,
bit that he did with Clive Anderson. I think he's going to be joining us soon in the studio.
So, it was a lot of fun. I remember the green room afterwards. They used to serve these roast beef and Yorkshire pudding, little mini Yorkshire puddings.
I thought we'd come back to the food.
They were delicious.
That's the thing you remember about the series. Andy Jacobs reminisces.
So I used to love those. And also,
what a bizarre thing to pull out of nowhere.
The point was, the show was 29 minutes, and we'd record about, especially with David and Frank, we'd record sometimes up to nearly an hour.
That's quite a big edit when you're editing. When would you record the show?
On a Thursday night.
Yeah.
And the minute we'd all go into the green room, we'd have the Yorkshire puddings and everything. As soon as
the Yorkshire puddings.
Can't forget them. As soon as everybody went home, then we'd go upstairs and we'd start editing the show that night.
Yeah.
So it was
not in the edit suite. Writing down how you're going to edit it? You went straight into the edit
because right. As the show went on, as I was a producer in the gallery, I'd be sort of making an edit plan as it went on. That's good. We'll put that bit in there. So,
and then you had to sell it to them because you may be cutting out one of the gags they wanted to save.
That never happened.
No, I'm sure.
And
I bet you had to suggest it a few times. Yeah, you had a real big laugh there, Frank, but I think we need to cut that out.
I didn't even bother to suggest it. I knew that would never, ever fly. So all the gags had to be in, and that was an important thing. But, I mean, by the time we'd started, like, in sort of I don't want you to feel sorry for me. We started about 9 o'clock on the Thursday morning. And I think I'd probably leave the studio about 4 o'clock in the morning the next day.
Yeah.
It was a long
Did you have the Friday off?
I did have the Friday off.
Lightweight. Lightweight.
But it was a massive amount of fun.
Yeah.
Nick Hornby, I remember, doing very well in that first series.
I mean, you look at the guests in the first series.
Patsy Kensit, she was lovely.
Second show, Karen Brady and Bob Mortimer. Third show, Roy Hattersley and Motti.
Yes.
Fourth show was Sue Johnston and Eddie Large. Show five,
you had
Basil Brush, Roddy Doyle and Richard Littlejohn. It's a great guest
booking.
Basil
Brush was tremendous because we'd all loved him. And a guy that worked him.
The guy that worked him, yeah. Sorry, kids, if it's ruined
his
it
name
for you.
Ivor. And Ivor liked to sort of preserve the whole sort of fourth wall thing about Basil, that Basil was a real person.
So you never saw Ivor.
So you couldn't see Ivor. So basically, Ivor had to be in position before the audience came into the room. So Ivor would sort of get underneath Stato's sort of kitchen area. He'd be cramped in there with his arm up.
And he was probably up there with you about 2.5 hours.
2.5 hours.
Wow, I mean,
By the time we had to sort of like take him out in that position.
Some
that
of the names in his first series. Andrew Ridgely came back with Peter Cook for the first. Lennox Lewis and Motti together on show seven.
I bet Motti doesn't remember that.
Karen Brady and Roddy Doyle.
West Ham forever. I'm forever blowing bubbles.
He did that.
Lennox, I remember that.
Yeah, what a lineup of guests you had then. 18 shows in the first series. That was a long run, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. It was a long run. And
Gab Cancello has got very happy memories of Ray Stubbs coming on and singing Barry White style Peter and Love.
Peter and Love. It's because every time Ray would say Peter and Love, he'd say Peter and Love. So they picked up on that.
Yeah. Garth Crooks come on as Garth Brooks with a big cowboy hat.
That was fun.
Yeah. So anyway, that should take you back. 1994 was today was the first show.
Marvellous.
Yeah, you remember quite
come
a lot.
Alive.
I mean, but the thing I do take away from this are the Yorkshire puddings.
Yeah, of course.
That's mainly what you.
Well, it's funny enough. At Christmas, I still make those things today myself, and the boys, my boys, were quite young at the time, and they used to come along to the green room, watch the show, and then sort of eat all the food afterwards.
Yeah.
And they reminded me at the time. They said, "Oh yeah, we used to have these at Fantasy Football," so it was a big thing for them as well.
James Cooper came along once. He said Dean Holdsworth and Paula Yates were guests. I seem to remember she tried to hit Frank every time he said something that she deemed naughty. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that. So I had to sort of have a word with her.
Gaz says
she was lovely, but I can't say it would be unfair to say why.
Gaz in the World Cup shows says he remembers the World Cup name compounds, including Dugarry Wilmots. That was one of them. Thanks for all of those. Thank you, Andy. And
my favourite memory with you is the one, and we have talked about this on the show before, but when Frank decided that he wanted to find lookalikes in great old works
great
of
old
art.
Great old paintings,
and
yeah.
Of course, but this was before the internet, before Google. So if you wanted to find something like that, the only way you could do it would be to go to the library and go through a load of books about old art and try and find something.
Yeah.
And we detailed you yourself to go and do that. And you came back with what absolutely brilliant Gary Neville and Glenn Hoddle in an old painting. It was unbelievable. It was them. It really was. And so we were so happy to show Frank. And his immediate reaction was, oh, is there another one?
There was. It was one Darren Anderton, but he said just these two then.
Yeah.
But I suppose that's what made it good. They were
hard taskmasters.
They were. Mitchell says, how can you reel off all of this nostalgia but only get 2 out of 5 on Don't Ask Me?
It's a good point, Mitch. It's a very good point.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
We were talking earlier on to Andy Smart, and our own Andy Jacobs told us he had, apart from Sunday football, with a team he used to co-manage, he has never really taken in proper lower league, non-league football. He's never been to a game.
Yeah, not good.
So a few people have been offering, including one a fellow Chelsea supporter here. He said, Andy, I'll take you to a home game at Boreham Wood as my guest, and you can see some good non-league football.
Moose loves it at Boreham Wood.
I know, it's his local club. Okay, yeah. Well, you'd have plenty of friends there. So, right, look, we'll find you somewhere. I mean, you've got closer. As we said, Hampton it will be very close for you. Walton, not very far away, is it?
I wouldn't want to do that.
Doesn't want to. Well, Torquay, the producers offered you. That's a nice handy trip for Andy.
Torquay,
he can't be bothered to go to Hampton. He's not going to go to Torquay, especially the way you're playing at the moment, John. Anyway,
that's true.
So
bad luck. The teenage climate activist Greta Thunberg.
Yeah.
has had a bit of a go at tennis ace Roger Federer.
Is he really?
Well, basically, Roger is...
Is it all the methane coming off those cows he keeps getting given?
No. He's got an association with Credit Suisse, the bank.
Oh, yeah.
And she's sort of basically saying, well, this was her quotes, really, that she thinks that they're spending too much money on oil, gas and coal sectors and everything. And she's told the tennis star to wake up. She said to him, wake up. But, of course, it's not so easy for Roger. I think Roger said, well, I do hear what Greater is saying to me, but it's worth about $5.5 million to him, the old sponsorship, yeah. So it's a bit tricky.
I don't think that's an argument she'll be particularly impressed with.
I don't think she will, really.
Yeah, but Greater, with respect, you know, $5 million a year.
It's a lot of money.
Now, the letter...
Before I move on from her, though...
Oh, yeah, go on, then.
I did love this thing in Manchester. I don't know if you saw this. This was a salt spreader in Manchester for the cold weather, of course. They've named it Greta Thunberg.
Oh, that's very good.
Isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Marvellous. Well done.
That's
them.
All me Greta material.
I think you finished that. Now, the letter to the newspaper is a work of art. There's been many books over the years of great letters to newspapers.
Not to the I'm star,
I'm not sure. Not sure. They've got a little thread going in the Metro 3 newspaper. And this is from Chuffed in Sussex.
Yeah, really, is he?
Chuffed said, Big T asked if anyone could beat his bargain of 6 Marks and Spencer's mince pies for 20p. I went into Tesco Sunday night. I got 11 very large cheese twists from the bakery section for 9p each.
Wow.
Did I beat you there, it
says. I have no idea.
And then Liz from Cumbernauld piped up. I can beat that, says Liz.
Oh, can't you?
I got a big packet of Turkey Feast crisps from M&S on Saturday for 10p. Expiry date, February the 14th.
Well, that's not bad.
What a time to be alive, eh?
It's marvellous.
It's that great book and sort of Twitter feed, Letters of Note, all the great letters that have been in the hands of the rich and famous over there. So there we are. Cheese twists, 9p a piece at Tesco.
This went to the star today on Gordon Ramsay from Ken. He says... People who swear a lot have ignorance of the English language. In other words, you are ignorant, but you are.
With the letters.
Probably can spell your, I'd imagine. Yeah. Why would you do that? I don't even know why you... the producer, of course, not very happy, wouldn't have enjoyed the 3:05 at Exeter today. It was the Exeter City Mayor's Novices Hurdle.
Wow. Who won, do you know?
I don't, actually.
Okay. The meeting was called off, so he's delighted.
Was
it anything that costs Exeter money, even as a town or a racecourse? Appears to delight.
Got some planning news.
With planning news.
Planning
news. Is it sport related?
Not really. It's Game of Thrones star Kit Harington.
Oh yeah.
Is worried that winter is coming. The actor, 33, played the show hero Jon Snow, has applied for a new heating system. His grade 2 listed home. You've got to hand it to the Daily Star for that.
This is the thing. If you've got a listed building and you want to heat it, I mean, you can't have ye old heating system, can you? You can't have... Valent weren't around. Other boilers are available, but they weren't around in about 1620, were they, really?
They did do the thing, though, that tabloid newspapers always do. So the headlines, Kit's Winter is Coming, so you get it. Game of Thrones star... He's worried that winter is coming, so he can't get that.
Yeah, winter's coming.
Right at the end, it goes, his character was famed for saying winter is coming. Yes, of course it was. Yeah.
Well, it's not strictly true. We're kind of into winter at the moment. Winter is here. Doesn't really work, does it?
No,
we apparently got a jingle for planning news. Do you want to hear it?
Oh, yeah, let's hear it.
Here
I didn't even know.
Planning news.
I've got Steve to do it.
I like that, John.
He's a proper actor. This
news.
He's worked in the West End.
Next time we've got planning news, I'll give you a bit of the heads up and then you can play that beforehand rather than afterwards.
No idea we had a jingle for that. It's brilliant. Africa's richest man, he's got big plans. We were reading about him today. Aliko Dangote, his name is. He's going to buy Arsenal.
Is he?
He's made his money in cement, oil, salt, sugar and flour. And he's 62. He's worth 8.5 billion quid.
It's a lot of money.
And he was on TV and he said, Arsenal. He said, it's a team I would like to buy someday. He said, but I've got another £20 billion worth of projects to concentrate on. He said, I'm trying to finish building the company. And then after I've finished, sometime in 2021, I'll buy Arsenal. Which is news to Stan Kroenke.
Stan Kroenke know about this?
He seems quite reluctant to sell. He said, I'm not buying Arsenal right now. I'm buying Arsenal when I've finished these projects. So, yeah, go on, Stan. You expect an offer from our old mate Aliko. It's coming in.
I know. Summer Monty's Fulham. Who?
Pardon?
This is a classic. Summer Monty's Fulham is a woman who went out.
Oh, it's a woman. It's not Summer Monty's book about Fulham.
No. It's a woman who went out with Paul Hollywood from... Bake Off.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they had a relationship and then it broke up.
Yeah.
So you'd think that'd be the end of it. But no, she's carving out a new career, apparently.
Is she?
As a social media influencer.
Fantastic.
It's not really a career, is it?
Well, blimey. I bet you wouldn't mind being a few quid behind some of the social media influences, would you, Andy?
I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Sad news about Tony Garnett, the film and TV producer.
Hmm.
Funnily enough, I met him during the fantasy football run. I think he came along and we got friends. He was a lovely man, a brilliant career in TV. He died.
Kathy Come Home, Kez, he was involved
so
in
many things. I'm sure
this
you
life,
would have read
wasn't
about.
He?
A huge Villa fan.
Was he really?
Yeah, and apparently his friend said we were so pleased that he passed away before the 6-1.
Oh, really? Is that what they were saying? Yeah. Well, yes, that was sad news. He was a brilliant man, wasn't he?
Yeah, a lovely man. So there we go. And I'm quite mad. John Bercow, the common speaker.
Yeah.
Apparently,
former,
exactly. Yeah. He went on a bit of a splurge before he left. He blew
a splurge?
Yes. 12 grand on a farewell party for 4 senior common staff.
That's so
bad. As you do. We'll do that next Christmas for the 4 of us.
Yeah.
Spent 12 grand on a party. One cab ride from London to Nottingham to give a university speech cost £1,000, Freedom of Information Acts revealed, or request
revealed.
Couldn't
he get the train?
It's a lot of money, isn't it, for a cab?
Yeah.
If, you know, £1,000, I'd have driven him for 500.
I tell you, he's undercutting the cab trade now. Now, that'll play well with the TalkSport heartland, won't it?
He'd have hated my driving.
Yeah, that's it. So you'll try and get out of the building, there'll be a blockade of black cabs right across London Bridge. Jacobs block, undercutting the cab trade.
Two bits of health news. Cups of green tea a week has a protective effect on you. So
you drink a lot of it, don't you?
I know, I drink 3 a day, so I should live till I'm 105.
Yeah, what a horrible thought.
Highly unlikely, I'd say. And there's a new pill on the market that could replace exercise for sofa loafers.
I've seen this, yeah.
It's perfect for my wife, who absolutely hates exercise. She'll love this. There's nothing
better.
It doesn't
sound healthy, though, does it? They think they've isolated the element.
Doesn't sound good, really.
That kind of brings you the fitness, apparently.
But talking of longevity, Terry Swan wrote to The Guardian, he said, my wife just made 18 pounds of marmalade. She's 77 and I'm 78. Which of the three of us will last the longest? I thought that's fair enough, really. 18 pounds of marmalade is a lot of marmalade.
Even Paddington Bear say, come on, don't be ridiculous.
Far too much.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
There we are. That was this afternoon's show. It was good to go down memory lane, wasn't it, Andy?
Lovely, yeah.
Yeah, marvellous. You're right.
Yeah.
Seems to have slightly zoned out. Not fit for man nor beast, isn't he? He's just basically phoning it in.
I was just thinking, hello, Mullers. I remember you down memory lane.
Yeah. Sorry. Okay, we'll see you tomorrow. We've got a lot of great guests. Bombay Bicycle Club, Seamus from the world of wrestling, Matt Ford. We'll see you then. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.